The End of the Affair, written by Graham Greene and read by Michael Kitchen.
Man has places in his heart which do not yet exist, and into them enters suffering, in order that they may have existence. Léon Blois. Book 1, Chapter 1. A story has no beginning or end. Arbitrarily, one chooses that moment of experience from which to look back or from which to look ahead. I say one chooses, with the inaccurate pride of a professional writer who, when he has been seriously noted at all, has been praised for his technical ability. But do I, in fact, of my own will, choose that black, wet January night on the Common in 1946? The sight of Henry Miles slanting across the wide river of rain? Or did these images choose me? It is convenient, it is correct, according to the rules of my craft, to begin just there, but if I had believed then in a God, I could also have believed in a hand plucking at my elbow, a suggestion. Speak to him, he hasn't seen you yet. For why should I have spoken to him? If hate is not too large a term to use in relation to any human being, I hated Henry. I hated his wife, Sarah, too. And he, I suppose, came, soon after the events of that evening, to hate me, as he surely at times must have hated his wife and that other in whom in those days we were lucky enough not to believe. So this is a record of hate far more than of love. And if I come to say anything in favour of Henry and Sarah, I can be trusted. I am writing against the bias because it is my professional pride to prefer the near truth, even to the expression of my near hate. It was strange to see Henry out on such a night. He liked his comfort, and after all, or so I thought, he had Sarah. To me, comfort is like the wrong memory at the wrong place or time. If one is lonely, one prefers discomfort. There was too much comfort even in the bed-sitting room I had at the south side of the Common, in the relics of other people's furniture. I thought I would go for a walk through the rain and have a drink at the local. The little crowded hall was full of strangers' hats and coats, and I took somebody else's umbrella by accident. The man on the second floor had friends in. Then I closed the stained glass door behind me and made my way carefully down the steps that had been blasted in 1944 and never repaired. I had reason to remember the occasion, and how the stained glass, tough and ugly and Victorian, stood up to the shock as our grandfathers themselves would have done. Directly I began to cross the common, I realised I had the wrong umbrella, for it sprang a leak and the rain ran down under my Macintosh collar, and then it was I saw Henry. You see, I could so easily have avoided him. He had no umbrella, and in the light of the lamp I could see his eyes were blinded with the rain. The black, leafless trees gave no protection. They stood around like broken water pipes, and the rain dripped off his stiff, dark hat and ran in streams down his black civil servant's overcoat. If I had walked straight by him, he wouldn't have seen me, and I could have made certain by stepping 2 feet off the pavement. But I said, "Henry, you're almost a stranger." And so his eyes light up as though we were old friends. "Benricks," he said with affection, and yet the world would have said he had the reasons for hate, not me. "What are you up to, Henry, in the rain?" There are men whom one has an irresistible desire to tease, men whose virtues one doesn't share. He said evasively, "Oh, I wanted a bit of air." And during a sudden blast of wind and rain, he just caught his hat in time from being whirled away towards the north side.